The next thing we want to talk about is that Anne is part of a program called Polar Trek. That's teachers and researchers exploring and collaborating. It's an opportunity for educators to be matched with researchers and go with them to the field. And in a case of Polar Trek, we send teachers to the Arctic and to the Antarctic. And that's where Anne is, Anne Lindsley is today. She's in McMurdo Station in Antarctica. And then all this program that we are, the Live from IPY events and Polar Trek, is part of an international effort that's called the International Polar Year. And the International Polar Year runs from 2007 to 2009, and it's where scientists and communities get together to learn more about the polar regions. And today, your participation in this Live from IPY event is part of the International Polar Year. So you're participating in something that celebrates the International Polar Year, and we hope that you'll get excited about the polar regions and want to learn more. Today we are going to be talking with a number of people, and I'm just going to turn it over to the teacher, Anne Lindsley, to introduce who she has with her today.
On this team, let's take a look.
Anne, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Anne, you're going to talk, and I... You're hard to hear, so you're pretty quiet, so you're going to have to speak up and get really close to the phone, maybe.
Okay. We got closer. Dr. Andrew Klein is with us, and Steve Sweet, and April Gossman, and Terry Palmer, and Dr. Kinnicutt is at Texas A&M, and I don't believe he's online.
Okay, Anne, you'll just keep going and introduce everybody.
Again, Dr. Klein.
Hi.
April.
Hello.
Dr. Kinnicutt's at College Station, so he's not here. And then Terry Palmer. And Steve Sweet.
Hello.
Okay. And it's your presentation, so just keep rolling, Anne.
All right. Well, Thanksgiving was here. It was on a Saturday, not Thursday. And if we can go on, we can get to Dr. Klein's talk about what our project is about. First of all, where we're at. We are in McMurdo, and if you look at the maps, we put plenty of them in here for you. We came through Los Angeles, down to Auckland, to Christchurch, New Zealand, and then down to McMurdo. I give an idea of where we're located. And next slide. From McMurdo, we are based around this area, and we've stayed on Ross Island the whole time. And Ross Island is part of the ice sheet and also the sea ice. You can see it on the map there. And I don't know what to tell you at this point. Harry says sometimes it's cold. We are it's a volcanic island. Everything that you're going to see, all the soils are black. You're looking at a map of the different claimant areas. We are in the area controlled by New Zealand, but we are a U.S. station. The Kiwi station is around the corner from us, not too far, Scott Bay. There you can see Ross Island, and McMurdo is down at the peninsula. I'm not sure if you can see it in yellow there, but Ross Island, Ross Island is attached to the mainland with the ice sheet on one side and sea ice, which is going to be melting, they say, soon. It melts every year. This is the station. You're looking at the station from Winter Quarters Harbor. And this is where the ship that Lolly is on is going to pull in January. All of this ice in here will be thawed out, except for the sea ice pier, which is kind of hard to point out to you. The dormitories are those four brown buildings. There's a bunch of others as well, but you can't see them in that picture. There's a whole port facility. And they've had us climbing all of these hillsides around here, among other areas in the back that you can't see.
Quite a condition.
part of this is Dr. Klein is going to explain to you about our project.
Howdy. Hope everybody's having a good time today. So our team is looking at the impact of humans around McMurdo Station. The first people that came to this area was Robert Falcon Scott and his team of British explorers in about 1902. And since then, there have been numerous explorers in the first part of the 1900s that explored different parts of Antarctica. And since about 1956-57, which was the International Geophysical Year, people have been in Antarctica. You can see some ships in the harbor there. Those were the original ships of Scott's expedition in about 1902-1903. And what we're looking at is impact of human beings in Antarctica. It's about the because very worried about the impact of our activities on the local environment. And because Antarctica doesn't have very in the world, so we're trying to protect Antarctica as part of the International Antarctic Treaty that describes how humans can interact on here. For example, you can't bother the penguins or the seals because they're protected by the International Antarctic Treaty down here. We have to monitor our environmental activities to make sure that they're being done in a way that won't hurt the environment in the long term. So we've been coming down here for about the last 8 years and have been studying how much impact we have as human beings. You can go on to the next slide, which shows another picture of Ross Island. And McMurdo Station is the star there, and it's at the end of what we call the Hut Point Peninsula. And so our team has been at McMurdo for about 8 years, I guess. But we've also got to visit some other sites where there are actually some historic huts from previous expedition, like at Cape Evans and Cape Roy, slightly to the north. This year, hopefully tomorrow, we're going to go to the northern part of Ross Island, called Cape Bird, and hopefully get to see a few penguins. But we kind of visit those to take some additional samples just to make sure that to provide some background to the levels of contamination that we measure at McMurdo Station. So again, this is a picture of McMurdo Station in 1902, and the next slide you should see should be a picture of McMurdo Station taken from about the same area by myself just a couple weeks ago. And it just gives you kind of a picture of how much this area has changed. In the summer right now, there's actually about 1,000 people at McMurdo Station. And in the wintertime, the population is about somewhere between 100 and 200 people. So believe it or not, this is the largest settlement in Antarctica. So this is the biggest town down here. There's a whole 1,000 people. And this is where we study. And the next slide, when it comes up, are going to be just a couple of maps to kind of show you how McMurdo Station has kind of expanded from time, over time. The first map is, the map on the left, is one that was drawn by the original Navy commander who established the station in about 1956. The map on the right is just the map that people use to get around the station today. And we can see there's a lot more buildings and stuff than there were when they first started. So over about 50 years, we've gone from having only one building here, the historic hut that Robert Falcon Scott built in 1902, to having almost 100 buildings and lots of fuel tanks, a harbor. There's even three airfields around here. So we have quite a lot of infrastructure which allows people, scientists, cool things all over Antarctica, like fly to the South Pole, study the glaciers and the ice sheets, study penguins, study seals, that type of stuff. But what we do is we actually study the impact of this science, of these activities. And the next picture, it turns out that because the station was started in the 1950s when the awareness of the environment was not so good, that we did some we did some activities that we wouldn't do today. So, for example, you can see an oil drum sitting there in the picture. That's on the bottom of Winter Quarters Bay. So there's some pollution in Winter Quarters Bay that affects the animals that live there, the fish, the starfish, that type of stuff. There's 1,000 people here, so if you notice the picture on the upper right, that's actually the sewage outfall pile. So that's all the stuff from the station that has been discharged into the bay. And we actually send divers down there, and they stick cores into these sediments at the bottom of the bay to measure how contaminated they are. And that little core tube has the little orange thing on it. So we have divers, and we'll show you a picture of a diver in a few minutes. But the next few slides just kind of give you an idea of what it kind of looks like at the bottom of the harbor and the surrounding area. At McMurdo Station proper on land, there aren't any animals. We have a few birds called skuas, but there are no penguins that live in this area. But in the ocean, there is all sorts of things. So you can see these three pictures are from different depths in Winter Quarters Bay. We actually take samples at 40 feet under the water, 80 feet under the water, and 120 feet under the water. And in these pictures, you can only see there's a worm at 40 feet, and there's a few starfish at 80 and 120 feet. So there's not a lot of organisms living in Winter Quarters Bay, and this is in part, we think, because it's quite disturbed, because there's been a lot of chemicals dumped there, and other things. So the next picture shows actually what it looks like right where the sewage comes out of McMurdo. And you can see there's a few more organisms there. There's some fish maybe. When your picture comes up, you'll see some fish, and some shells and a few other things. It just shows you it's a little bit different when you go to the sewage outfall. And we also had sent some divers there this year, and it was pretty smelly. So there you can kind of see what it looks like at the sewage outfall. That's where human beings are having actual impact on the environment because of dumping of our sewage and some waste that we used to dump many years ago. The next set of slides shows some pictures from another area near the base called Cape Armitage. And in Cape Armitage, there's a lot more organisms. You see some sponges, some starfish, some spicule mats, but you can just get an idea that there's a lot more organisms there. And we think there's more organisms at Cape Armitage than at those other two areas because the other two sites have the impact of humans, where here in Cape Armitage, there aren't so many. There isn't much impact. And how we study this is we have divers. We have divers that get in these dry suits because the water is actually -2 degrees Celsius, so it's colder than water at your house would freeze at 0 degrees Celsius. So this is even colder than water in your refrigerator because it has some salt in it. So these divers put these dry suits on, which keeps them sort of warm, and they go to the bottom, and you can see a picture there of a diver sticking these core tubes into the ground or into the marine sediments, and then we extract them and we do some analysis on them. The April and Terry, and there's going to be a picture of Terry coming up in a minute, they look at how toxic the sediments are to a certain type of organism to see if the actual sediments will kill animals. And we call this the sediment toxicity test. And we've been doing that on the station this year like we've done in the past. And that gives us some idea whether or not these sediments can actually hurt the organism. No, we don't use solar panels here for the question. But what we do then is we take these sediments back to the lab in Corpus Christi, Texas, and also in College Station, Texas, and we measure what are the chemical contaminants in these sediments. And you should see a map now that has some dots on it. The bigger the dot, the higher the contamination. And so you can see on the left of the picture, there's some big dots in Winter Quarters Bay. Those, that indicates high levels of hydrocarbons from fuel. There's also some big dots off the sewage outfall, which are kind of the middle set there. And that also indicates there's hydrocarbons. And if you go all the way to the right, you can see little dots. And that indicates those areas at Cape Armitage don't have many hydrocarbons. So we expect that those areas are not as impacted by humans as the other areas. The next slide should look almost the same as the slide before, except instead of looking at hydrocarbons, we're looking at lead. And lead gets into the environment because of things like people don't dispose of batteries correctly. Oh, pardon me. That's the wrong slide. The next slide is PCB. These are very nasty chemicals that are used in transformers and other things, and they're very toxic to the environment. And like the Hudson River has lots of PCBs in it that they're trying to clean up. But you can see the same thing, that in Winter Quarters Bay and near the sewage outfall, there's a lot of PCBs. But near Cape Armitage, there's not so many PCBs. So this tells us that over the station's history, people dumped some pretty nasty things around from the station. But you go only a few hundred feet away from the station, and we don't see very much impact of humans. So this means that even though human beings are having an environmental impact near McMurdo Station, it's just right near the station. And you get a little bit away, it's nice and clean. And the next slide should just be the same thing, and it should just show lead, which is, again, from batteries and that type of stuff. And again, it shows the same pattern that near Winter Quarters Bay and the sewage outfall, where we used to dump stuff, there's contamination. But farther away from the station, there's not. And there's a few more dots on this one because we collected a few more samples one year. Now, the next map, which has some colored dots, kind of is our map that kind of shows how disturbed the fauna on, or the animals on the seafloor are. And when you see green dots, that means that those animal communities are pretty much undisturbed by human activity. Where they're red dots, they're disturbed communities. And the people, Terry and April, can figure that out by looking at all the little organisms in the soil. And so what we see is that, again, near in Winter Quarters Bay and near the sewage outfall, where the red dots are, humans have actually probably disturbed the animals there. But you go a little bit away from the station, and it pretty much goes back to natural. And this is a good thing, because we don't want the human impact to be very great at McMurdo. And, the next slide just shows you a core that we used to collect it, and that's another of our team who used to come here, Sally. And they basically just analyze these cores, and they look under a microscope, and they count all the little organisms they find in these cores. We also monitor what's going on the land, because that's where human beings actually work today. Fortunately, there aren't any real large organisms besides a few skuas, which are kind of they're kind of bird that's like a gull. They're about the only land organisms that are here. So even if there is some fuel spills at McMurdo, which we'll see in a few minutes, they aren't really affecting too much wildlife, which is good. So this picture is just our crew. We go out and we collect sediment samples in the dirt. And there's Terry lying on the ground having a fun time. And that's Ann Lindsley and April making some measurements. And it's Steve Sweet who only records things on a clipboard because he's an old guy. And what we do to sample soils is, you guys have probably used a global positioning or GPS. You might have one in your car. Well, what we do is we put random sampling sites all over the station, and we kind of play geocaching. We go find these sites, and we pick up some soil. And that's a picture of one of our crew collecting a little vial of soil that we send back to College Station, Texas, and analyze it. And once we do this, we can make maps of what the contamination level in the soil around McMurdo is. And the next picture you should see should be a map of almost several hundred samples that we've taken across the station. And these were taken early on. These were taken from 1999 to 2001. And hopefully in a second you'll be able to see some red dots come up and some yellow dots and some green dots. The green dots are where, there we go, the green dots are where we don't see very many hydrocarbons. That's from fuel that's been spilled on the ground. The yellow dots are kind of areas where there's a moderate level of fuel that's been spilled. And there's a few red dots that indicate really high levels of fuel. And these are, we tend to find these things around where cars are parked, where we refuel vehicles, and that type of thing. So that's what we study. And what we will do is we take these points and we use some software called Geographic Information Systems that some of you might use in your classes, and we can take these points and we can turn it into a map easier to look at that is what we call a continuous rather than at certain points, and it will give us a nice picture of the spatial pattern, or a map view of what the contamination is at McMurdo Station. And what we find is that really the only fuel we see here where there's high levels of fuel at McMurdo are in areas where in the past or today there's activities that people use that have gasoline in them or diesel fuel. So there's a lot of people here travel by helicopter to do science. So there's some fuel at the helicopter pad because helicopters kind of spew stuff out of them. There's some hydrocarbons around the area where we are gas stations. And there's also some where we park some beef pickles. Oh, and so in the next map, all the blue areas are areas where there's not very much contamination. And where you start to see the red, those areas are a bit higher. So when we look and see what's underneath those red areas again, we find it's roads, it's parking lots, it's helicopter fueling pads, and it's where we use to store fuel. But the good news is most areas of the station don't have very high amounts of petroleum in them. We have also spent a lot of time looking at different metals that are in the soil, like lead and chromium and all sorts of other things. And the good thing is we don't find too much in the soil. So overall, McMurdo Station is not too dirty, even though it's the part of Antarctica with the most people in it. So what we do is every year we've been here for 8 years, and we'll hopefully will come back next year. And every year we collect some more samples. So this map is just a map of all the places that we've gone around and we collected samples around the station this year. And these are what we call random samples because they're just spread out all over randomly. That's because of statistics, which you might learn about in school sometime. We collect 70 of those, and that's where we have to walk up and down the hills, and it's very tiring. We also collect some samples around areas that we know where they're going to be spilling fuel, or we think they might be spilling fuel. And these are what we call intensive sites. So we have gone a few other places and collected more samples around the station. We go back every year just to see if things are getting dirtier or cleaner. And over the past 8 years, we've really found that there hasn't been too much change at McMurdo. It hasn't gotten too much dirtier, which is good. And what we try to do is, the next map is just kind of a map that's going to show you where we find high levels of these things called total petroleum hydrocarbons, which are just fuel that's been spilled in the ground. And we also have, there's going to be some blue circles on this map. And these blue circles, the bigger the circle, the larger the amount of fuel that's been spilled. So the nice thing about this map is where it's green, there's not very high levels of hydrocarbons in the soil. Where there's red, it's a little bit higher. But the good thing in McMurdo is that today, where we tend to spill fuel, is actually in areas where fuel has probably already been spilled over the last 50 years. So even though we're doing activities today that are impacting the environment, they're occurring at the same point in space where they had in the past. So we're not making areas that were used to be clean dirtier. We're making areas that were already dirty a little bit dirty. And so the next slide should just be a picture of us, I hope, saying that's our Thanksgiving picture from all the teams.
Great. Thank you very much, Andrew. There was a number of questions that came up while you were talking, and you did address some of them, but we're going to kind of back up a little bit. And I think I'll just let the people ask them themselves. Mary Ann, group from Chico Junior High, you had your hand up. What's your question? Star 6 to unmute your phone. Okay. I don't know what happened to Marianne's group, but we'll move on. Let's see. There were some questions from Joe Dodds. Go ahead, Joe Dodds' group in O'Leary Junior High.
You were talking in class as you were presenting and about maybe the type of energy used at Antarctica and also the Arctic. And could there possibly be less fuel and maybe more wind turbines or solar power or any other sort of that green environmental technology for power at the base?
There are some field stations that do use solar power, and there are some groups in Antarctica that are starting to use wind power, but for the foreseeable future, probably a lot of things are actually going to still have to run on fossil fuel. It's just kind of the environment. In the summertime, when it's light all the time, you can use solar power. But in the winter, in the dark, it just doesn't work. And sometimes it gets very windy, so turbines have to be able to handle pretty high wind conditions. But I think a lot of Antarctic programs are trying to get greener and use less energy and more alternative fuels.
I was up at Summit. They were trying to do that. They were trying to go with electric snowmobiles. They were talking about solar paneling on some of the buildings up there, and certainly they had started putting in wind turbines, and thought that was my reason for asking that question.
Okay, thanks. Penn Oak Middle School, Joan, you have had some questions. Can you unmute your phone and ask them?
Where do you get your electricity from?
The electricity at McMurdo Station right now is generated from basically 5 or 6 diesel engines that generate the electricity. They power all the station. They let us get water from seawater using reverse osmosis. So it's all based on diesel fuel. And once a year, a big tanker comes in and supplies all the fuel for both the station, but also for the airplanes and the helicopters that fly out of here.
Okay.
And also supplies all the energy for diesel fuel for South Pole as well.
Okay, and there was a question online also from that school. They had asked what are the major contaminants in the soil there. I don't know if, you know, they feel that was your presentation.
Well, in the terrestrial soil, we've looked, and basically the only thing that we have found really high levels of all over the place is hydrocarbons. There's a few areas where there's some high lead levels, and those are just here and there. Really just related to the spilling of petroleum products over the last 6 years. There's not really anything else that we find too much. In the marine environment, station is Sewage Outfall. Because of some historic activities, probably by the Navy, there is some very high levels of PCB, or polychlorinated bisphenol, which are a very nasty chemical.
Okay, and related to that, the Liverpool High School had some questions about, was there any natural organic matter and bacteria in the soil near McMurdo? It was an online question.
There is. These soils are basically volcanic. There is some carbon in the soils. There's probably some soil bacteria. We haven't actually studied that. There are some other groups that do study soil organisms, not so much in McMurdo Station, but in the Dry Valleys about 40 miles from here. There's some very interesting bacteria and other communities in the soil, and they get a lot of scientific studies.
Okay, and I see that Horn Elementary School has their hand raised. Sherry, go ahead and unmute your phone and ask your question. Horn Elementary? Okay, Horn? Okay, I don't know what their question was. Rob Watt, let's see. Oh, sorry, not. We have a question online from the Bel Air High School, and they say Antarctica has a volcanic activity. Are there similar features to the ones we saw in Yellowstone? I think that's for Anne.
Guthrie, there's no geysers and hot pots. And Mount Erebus, we've seen many times. It is smoking. When it's not clouded over, we can see it. There is a picture that I put in with the presentation if it comes up. We saw it the other day. We hiked up pretty high, about mid-level on a hill nearby it, and it was putting out quite a bit of smoke. There is a current project on Mount Erebus now testing the lava and the seismic activity of it. There are earthquakes in the area. There's the picture. There are, of course, all of the seismic activity associated with volcanology is happening in and around the area, but you don't see the same type of topography that we saw in Yellowstone. You don't see the hot springs here. And you don't see the geysers, of course.
Okay, great. We have a question from Rob's school in South Carolina. Rob, do you want to unmute your phone and ask your question? Spartanburg High School? Okay, I'll ask it for him. Have you met people from other countries, and what are their feelings towards us?
Well, we actually have... It's a good thing it's not a camera. one of the members of the team is Terry Palmer, and he's actually a Kiwi. He puts up with everybody. There are others. Andrew Project is here. They've had a lot of Italians and French and some Germans also with them. Everyone in the science community works together well, it appears. There's no, you know, international squabbling that, you know, you see out on the streets or anything. Everyone, it's fine. The common language is English. There's a few, Germans, okay. There's a few Chinese scientists that are working in the United States that are here, a couple Japanese that I've seen. It doesn't look like a mix in my classrooms, but other ethnicities are represented here.
Okay, great.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to have Maggie's Kane's class talk, but go ahead, finish what you're going to say, Ann.
No, that was everything.
Okay. Maggie Kane's class from Arizona.
This is Maggie Kane's class, and our question is, because the Arctic and Antarctic were not frozen at a time, have you ever found, like, species, fossils of species that were dinosaurs or any other animals like that?
Around Ross Island, there aren't any fossils because it's volcanic, but on the Antarctic Peninsula, you certainly find fossils from millions and from hundreds of millions of years ago when it was warmer. I'm not sure they found any dinosaurs, but certainly found plant fossils of warmer times. There's a huge amount of marine species you find on some islands in Antarctica, so yes, there were fossils from when Antarctica was a much warmer place.
Are there any other questions from Maggie's class? Okay. We're going to move on to Joan Lynn Lindsley's class in Pin Oak Middle School in Texas. Go ahead. You have a number of questions online, so go ahead.
If the volcano erupts, will all the ice in Antarctica melt, rising to sea level?
No. Volcanism in Antarctica is pretty localized, so it's not going to melt all the ice in Antarctica by any stretch of the imagination.
If that classroom has another question, go ahead, because you have some online that you... Okay, we need a question? Okay, there's a few online. What is the range of elevation there in McMurdo Station?
The elevations in McMurdo Station probably range from about sea level up to about 700 feet, which is the height of Ob Hill. There's some areas that are slightly higher. Mount Erebus is about 14,000 feet, and you can see that. And at the other side, away from Mount Erebus, there's part of the Transantarctic, which are called the Royal Society Range, and they're tens of thousands of feet high, too. So when you wander around here, you can see lots of high peaks. It's really very beautiful.
Okay. Thanks. And we have somebody also from that school, from Pin Oak, was asking about, is the ozone layer in Antarctica healing?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. There are people down who come down here every year, and they actually measure it, both on the ground and from satellites. I just haven't seen the most recent pictures.
Okay, and Bel Air High School has a question online. They say, Mark wants to know, what is the governing body in Antarctica?
That's a very good question. It's a hard one to answer. Activities in Antarctica are all run under what's called the International Antarctic Treaty that went into force in 1959, and there have been four or so amendments to the Antarctic Treaty. There is not one single governing body in Antarctica, you can see a map, certain countries have competing claims for territory in Antarctica, but by and large, Antarctica is, people work together pretty well here. There are some bodies, like all the groups that work in Antarctica get together and discuss things. And there is an international treaty meeting that tells basically every year different countries that are part of the Antarctic Treaty. I think next year they're actually meeting in St. Petersburg, Russia. And so this is where all the countries with a claim and an interest in Antarctica get together and hash out issues. So it's kind of an international governing body.
I'm going to go through the schools again and see who would like to ask some questions. And Jeff from Liverpool High School is signing off, and he said to say thank you. We have Horn Elementary. Do you have some more questions that you'd like to ask Ann and the group? Star 6 to unmute your phone.
Can you hear us?
Yes, you have to get very close and talk loudly.
Okay. This is Will Kennedy. What is the most unusual thing you've found there?
They were hard to hear, but I think the question was, what was the most unusual thing you found there?
I think Terry Palmer wants to answer this question.
No. I'm just here.
I guess it's a toughie. I guess the most unusual thing for me down here is this town. It's this town itself. You know, it's quite a big settlement. It's kind of weird having everything, you know, it's so pristine and beautiful, and then you've got McMurdo Station, which is far from that. And it's kind of weird. That's pretty unusual for me. I guess another thing unusual down here, all the different things, McMurdo Station, like the bowling alley and the church, a couple of bars here, and, you know, different things that I just wouldn't expect to be here. That's about it.
Okay, is there another question from Horn Elementary?
Hang on. Kristen, that was my son, and his fourth grade class
No, Will was. And I think for you guys, I think the animals, the one penguin and the one seal that we see, probably be the most interesting to you guys. And also the ice. There's so much ice down here that it's so much different from the environment that we live in. And the way the weather changes on a daily or hourly basis in some cases, it can be bright, sunny, and then all of a sudden there's a bank of clouds and it starts snowing for 2 days.
Yeah, and there was a question online that actually from Bel Air, and they said, what are the general weather patterns in Antarctica? Since you're talking about weather, can you go describe that a little bit more and what you guys have seen?
Well, a bunch of my students ask, is it cold? And I think cold is now a very relative issue because I don't think 25 degrees is cold here when you're out doing things, but 25 degrees in Houston is miserable. It's very dry, so if it's not windy, then it's very, very livable. Let's see, three of the people in this room have on short sleeve shirts, and the rest of us just a long sleeve shirt, and probably we'll go outside in that as well. It's not unbearable, but when the cloud, when it becomes overcast and when it becomes windy, then those big red coats come out, or windbreakers, thermals, that kind of stuff. Those big white boots when we're out in the marine area. That's the only time we've worn them besides when we have to get on the aircraft. And those are hot. A happy camper school was kind of cold for me in April at times. And that's what one of those pictures is that you see there. April and I had to go to happy camper school, and that was the tent we slept in, and that's basically what we slept in as well. It was pretty cold.
Okay. Anne, did you want us to go through the rest of the pictures, or do you want to take questions from the students?
We can, if you want to see the pictures, I can explain them real quick.
Okay.
Once you back up and just some of the. Okay. The one you're looking at now, the tires, my students go out to Wyoming and we go to a coal mine where there's huge, huge trucks. And that's about the only thing that works down here. They're not as big as they are out in Wyoming, but that's a delta which actually transports people around on the ice. And the reason the picture was actually the tire was getting pretty bald. But anyway, the other picture there in front of the tent, that's a Scott tent, that's April and myself. That was around 10 o'clock at night. You see how light it is. The sun just moves across the ice sheet, moves from one side to the other. At night, it's actually a lot brighter because of the reflection off of the ice. And I was cold. April was in the middle. She was just fine. And another girl was on the other side, and she was too warm. So, then down at the bottom, that's just a picture of the sea ice, so the edge of the sea ice, a lot of areas where we were testing. The sea ice, when you get closer to the side of the island, you get these pressure ridges. And those pressure ridges are where the ice is pushed upwards from the action of the waves of the sea and also the edge of the continent. And they can be very dangerous, but I just think they make really interesting formations. And the other picture there is pictures of ice crystals in the sea ice itself. And I don't know how much the tires cost. I know that the tires on mining trucks are about $30,000 a piece, but those are carrying 10 tons of coal material. So I don't know how much these cost, but they have stockpiles of them up here, down here. You can go to the next pictures. Okay. The previous pictures, well, okay, here are the wildlife. That's all the wildlife we've pretty much seen besides the SUA. The picture at the top is a Weddell seal that was out on the ice. And then I went out to one of Scott's huts at Cape Evans, Terra Nova Hut. I put a section on history on the journal, which you can go and look at the background and a bunch of the pictures from Scott's hut there. But when we were leaving, this one lonely penguin was walking around, and so they all told me he was lost and probably wasn't going to make it, but I'm hoping that he turned around and went back to the sea. But that's an Adelie penguin. That's the only penguin, the only seal, and the other critters that you see there are some of the collections that we've pulled up, the divers have pulled up from the sea floor. and the worms, which were really slimy, different types of sea stars and worms and anemones are in that bottom picture. No, they do not mine in Antarctica. It's against the Antarctic Treaty. You cannot exploit the area for mineral resources here. There's a picture of a skua, a big brown kind of looking monstrous seagull. It likes to attack people who are carrying food out of the galley. The other pictures there are various critters from Cape Armitage and also from the last control site off of Cape off of Hut Point. The starfish there, you see it against the size of April's hand, how large it is. It was actually eating other baby starfish. There's a picture on the journal where you can turn it over, where the on the photo gallery, you can turn it over and you see what it was eating. The two fish are dragonfish. Sea urchins and different sea stars are there.
Yeah, and we have some schools that want to ask some questions. First, there's a couple online from Bel Air. Jason asked, how much do the tires cost? Oh, sorry about that. Would they mine in Antarctica? Okay, so let's go to, sorry about that. We'll go to Pin Oak Middle School. They want to ask their questions on the phone. Go ahead, Joan.
This is Joan Lindsley from Pin Oak Middle School, and I have three students with questions.
Hi, we were just wondering about the pictures you showed us earlier, about the Scott's expedition and the picture of the Muradov Bay. We were wondering what months they were taken.
The older one.
Those probably would have been taken, I would guess, in maybe February, because the ships are in, and that takes that time for the sea ice to break up.
Okay, next question.
How do you keep your bearings to keep from getting lost?
Terry's been dragging around a GPS unit. That's the thing we do in any place.
A Garmin meter.
All right, next question. Is Antarctica exposed to natural disasters like hurricanes or typhoons or tornadoes?
There's no hurricanes or typhoons, but those are tropical systems. What they have here are Herbies, and those are similar type of systems that you would have same characteristics, but in some cases as a hurricane or a typhoon. Extremely high winds. It's a high wind. You don't have rain.
To have a disaster, you have to have a human population that's going to be hurt. There is nasty weather, as Dan was saying, in Antarctica. There's winds that come off the polar plateau and can have really high winds, but because there's snow down here, it gets picked up, so the real concern is that you cannot see. They're called whiteouts. And you really just can't see because there's snow in your face. You can't see your hands sometimes. Yes, otherwise they're called blizzards.
And our other question related to the freezing of air when you are diving. We'd written it in, but it didn't get answered. How long does it take for it to freeze over if you have dug or drilled the hole for them to dive in?
A couple days, typically, it will start to freeze up, and then you have to chip it out again. Sometimes. But what often will happen is the seals are in the area, and they'll actually come up and gnaw at it and keep a hole open large enough for them to breathe through.
Okay, thanks. We also have some questions, I believe, from the O'Leary Junior High School. Joe Dodds, is your group ready?
There was a question about what time it is in McMurdo. We're at Mountain Standard Time, and I didn't know what to say. So, Anne, what time is it there? What day?
It's Friday morning, 8:35 a.m.
Thanks.
And related to that, Bel Air has a question. Since it's is daytime all the time, is it hard to go to sleep?
Some people have that problem, but I can sleep at my desk, so it's never hard to sleep. And it depends upon how late you stay up at night and what you're doing. Some people have problems, others don't. My roommate has the entire room blacked out, so it looks like it's dark all the time in there.
Okay, thanks. And I think we're going to wrap this up here in about 5 minutes. Is there any other questions from Horn Elementary School? We'll just kind of go down the row of the list here. Horn Elementary. I can't tell. Penn Oak Middle School, Jones class. Do you guys have any? Oh, is this?
Yes, we have one.
Okay, go ahead.
That was our question and our thank you to you very much. They've all enjoyed it.
Great. Okay, and Joe Dodd's group from Twin Falls, Idaho. Do you guys have any more questions?
Did you get that?
Nope, we didn't hear a word.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said we're good to go. Thank you for answering all of our questions.
All right. Thanks for joining us today. And Bel Air High School, do you guys have any more questions? Well, we're waiting for Bel Air to come online here. I just want to tell everybody that this live event will be archived, and so we'll post that on the website under Live from IPY, so you can review it later on if you want to, and be sure to follow Ann and the team online, and if you didn't get your question answered today, you can post it in the Ask the Team section, and Ann will be responding to those. Bel Air, are you still there? Okay, apparently they're just typing in, have you seen any evidence of the Ross ice shelf? Is the question.
Yes. It's right outside the door. We've been out on it. At Happy Camper School, we camped out on it. It's over by Scott Base, over to the side of Scott Base. And so it's not right here in our immediate area of McMurdo.
Okay. It looks like they're getting ready to type another question. And is there anybody else that's on the phone that would like to ask a question that hasn't had a chance? Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
What's the weather like back in?
What was that?
Oh, what's the weather like back in the U.S.?
Oh, that's a question to the people in the U.S. What part of the country do you want to hear from?
Texas,
okay. Yeah, we'll let Bel Air or Horn or Penn Oak or somebody in Texas answer. I don't know if we're going to get an answer. Okay, I don't know. Does anybody? Oh, there's a question from Bel Air, and I don't know if you're ever going to get your answer. But how much degradation is evident, Sandy? And I'm not sure if I understand that question. So hopefully, you guys in McMurdo understand that.
We're not quite sure what it means. We're wondering the degradation of what type of thing. Yeah, if you mean how much degradation of the pollutants, because it's so cold here and there's not much biological activity in the soil, once there's a pollutant in the soil, it just doesn't break down very quickly here.
Okay, apparently that's what they meant. Okay, thanks. I think we'll wrap it up. And I want to say thanks to the Ann and the team. You guys did a great job, and thanks to everybody participating on the phone. It was nice to hear your questions and read them. And we'll see you guys all online and keep following your journals. Thanks very much, everybody. And be sure to turn off your phones and then exit out of Horizon Windbug when you're done. Anybody want, you guys can all say goodbye, unmute your phones, and say goodbye to the team if you want to.
Janet, I need my kids to stay for a minute.
Okay. Hopefully your kids know that. But everybody else,
I just sent them a message.
message. I sent them a message last night, too.
Okay. Well, hopefully they're still on. Okay, everybody
Bye,
else.
Lauren. Talk to you later, Will.